Hello and welcome to the Whiteboard Rugby Podcast. It is Sam Squared. It is two bold men for the price of one. It is Lana and Roberts. It is hopefully a couple of voices of reason in the mad, mad world of rugby union right now. I hope you're enjoying being with us. We are up and running and we are really enjoying ourselves, aren't we, Sam, Lana? We're getting used to talking to each other regularly.
It's lovely, and I was fairly struck by how nice people were to us as well. It was lovely hearing very nice things about the first episode, and we're recording the day of the second, well, our first Blindside episode, second episode ever, and we've got more good feedback on that. So yeah. We don't want to blow a horn too much, Sam, but it is very nice, isn't it?
Indeed, as my grandfather used to say to you, sometimes you have to blow your own horn because no one else will, and that is it sometimes, but it is, as you say, always nice to have some feedback. Really impressed with Carly McKinnon. Well done on that. I thought she was excellent. Incredibly sensible and eloquent and really quite intelligent, you know, and kind of seeing the game in a really good way. And it really filled me with huge amount of confidence for US rugby. I know we've been here before, and I know that we have been for the last 10, 15 years thinking great things about the US side of things. But yeah, I thought she was excellent. Really, really good.
Yeah, it was great, to have her along. And if you haven't listened to that, you can find it on the same place where you find all these episodes. But just look for the Blindside one, and you'll see that there with Carly McKinnon.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've been busy in various different ways. August is always a nice time to unwind, and we unwind in different ways. I went off to the east coast of England to go and play some golf, but I know that you have been busy in the west of the United Kingdom.
I have. Yes, I've been about 4 years ago, just after all the lockdowns. My dad and I went from Holyhead all the way down to Chepstow, from northwest to northeast of Wales. And for the last few years, we've been playing something similar, and we finally did it, going from St David's in the far southwest all the way up to Flint in the far northeast in 2 days, stopping off at Llanidloes in the middle of Wales, more or less. So it was very good. It was enjoyable now that I've stopped. It was very enjoyable. But we started off St. David. Sam, quick quiz question. Do you know a rugby player from St. David's?
I think I probably do, but I can't come up with it right now. You're going to tell me somebody who's pretty obvious. Go on.
Jazz Joyce is from St. David's. Yeah, it's hard to imagine anyone. Yeah, exactly. It's hard to imagine anyone coming from there and making a rugby career. Really, it's so far west and it's so far away from all the major spots. But on the drive down, we went to visit my grandparents in Caerphilly. On the drive down, you pass so many of those famous names: Bridgend, Whitland, go through Narberth, you know, some of those fantastic Welsh clubs of the past. And yeah, we did a few, spotting a few on the way up as we were riding by as well. Newcastle Emling, for example, which produced a lot of Scarlets over the years.
I like a bit of cycling myself. A footnote and a little note: a friend of mine has damaged himself quite seriously on a bike recently, broke his pelvis. So, you know, if we all like our cycling, just be careful. Just make sure, you know, especially us men who think we're a bit younger than we are. But I love cycling. I love getting out there. There is no better way, I feel, than seeing the countryside and working out the countryside than on a bike. And it must have been brilliant. It must have been a little tiring, Sam, Lana, going up some of those hills and dales.
It was a little. I was kind of humbled, though, as I finished by another cycling feat achieved this weekend by Billy Twelve Trees on
Indeed.
Behalf of your mate, Ed Slater. So there's a few different things going out on two wheels this weekend.
Yeah, it was really nice to see Billy retracing the steps of the original four-ed cycle ride. And what a machine. What a man and what a mission. Really, really good. And if you have any pennies, do contribute to the wonderful four-ed campaign. A really, really worthwhile attempt at trying to combat this terrible, terrible disease of MND. So we wish everyone well. Wish you well if you're thinking about getting up on your bike pretty soon. I would recommend it. Maybe not do the Lana full. How many miles is that from west to northeast?
It was just over 200 miles. Eesh. So about 110 on the first day, about 90 odd on the second day. So yes, it was. It's quite tough. Quite a long way.
Fantastic. What have we got in store for our avid listeners today? Where are we going to go?
Well, we've got two good discussion points. We're going to talk about the market for players, the market for clubs. You've had your ear close to the ground, and you've got some good feedback from a variety of different places, and I will be able to add some as well. I've obviously heard a few bits over the years through the free agents thread, so I think we've both got a fairly good working idea about how the industry works in terms of getting players into the clubs, where they're then going to wow the fans at. And then we're also going to touch on the qualification for the World Cup in 2027. That is actually going to be done next year. So obviously, you might remember in 2023, Portugal were only confirmed, I think it was May 2023, when they actually drew to the US. But this is all going to be done by next year. So a little bit of a change there, four more teams, and we're going to talk about that. And hopefully I will explain exactly what's going on.
Yeah, I hope so. That might be all on you there, Sam, because that's a very complex puzzle. I'll hand that over to you. But before we get really going, I've got a team here, right? I'm going to read out this team to you, Sam. It's a little bit of a quiz. Everyone else can join in. I'm going to give you the team. It's 1 to 15 with a few added extras to try and get you to work out what this team is all about. So you have to guess what the parameters were for me selecting this team. And I can tell you, it is a really, really good team. Have a listen to this one. In the front row, Carl Sinclair, Agustin Crevy and Mako Vunipola. In the second row, Courtney Laws and Elliot Stuck. And in the back row, Jasper Visa, Lewis Ludlam and Billy Vunipola. Right, you may already know where this is going, but can I just say that, can you think about that pack? That pack is extraordinary, isn't it?
It's unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable, yeah.
That could be you could take on the world with that pack. You really could. I could have had, extra few guesses here, I could have had Alex Waller in the front row, Will Collier in the front row, could have had Alec Hepburn in the front row. Few props hanging around. In the back line, Alan Davis, partners Owen Farrell. Could have had Callum Sheedy at 10. Love Callum Sheedy. Johnny May on one wing. Listen to the centre partnership. Andre Esterhazen and Manu Tuilagi.
Dear.
Lewis Liner on the other wing. And Sean Maitland at 15. In the centre, I could have had Ollie Devoto. I could have had Sam James. Now, all of those names, 23, 24 names that I've mentioned there, the overwhelming thing there for me is a huge amount of experience, a huge amount of playing experience. So what do you think links every single one of those players?
I was a little bit nervous halfway through the forwards. I think I got it halfway through the back. So they've all been signed elsewhere. They've all moved club in this offseason.
They're all leaving the Premiership.
Yeah.
And when you look at the amount of experience leaving the Premiership right now, then when you think, well, what's coming in, it isn't as strong, it isn't as big. And we're going to talk about the market and where the market's played this summer. But for me, when I started to sort of have a look at the players leaving and look at the amount of total of caps and Premiership representations these guys have had, we're looking at thousands of caps and thousands of appearances just walking away from the Premiership this season. And I'm starting to get a little bit worried about exactly where that's going to go. Is the reliance going to be on, you know, sort of younger players? Is there going to be a gap to fill? Is there going to be people coming in? What are your thoughts when you hear that team and you hear that experience leaving the Premiership? Is there a worry a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think it wasn't entirely English, but I would say maybe there was only five or six non-English.
Crevy, Visa, and Esterhazen.
Esterhazen, yeah.
And Liner, of course, and Maitland, Scotland and Italy capped. And Davis as well. But I mean, UK-wise, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so I think that's definitely a concern. I think there's two ways of looking at it. So the first is, it's not good for a Premiership to see that level of talent walk out the door. And I think there's always got to be a balance. And we have a very interesting episode coming up with Tom Tainton from the Bristol Bears, where we talk not so much about the mechanisms of the market, but one of the things that Bristol have been good at over the years is they've got a lot of young talent in, but they've also got a lot of that older talent which can draw the crowds in. Because the likes of Manu Tuilagi, whether he is the player he once was, I think we can probably agree, you know, he's there's too many miles on the clock now for him to be consistently at the level he was at before. He will get a certain number of people more to his games 100%. Than someone else. And so from a business perspective, you have to be worried because those are the people, pretty much everyone in that list is someone you would love to go and watch play.
Yeah.
And whether they're going to be replaced by someone who maybe he's 21 and maybe better, I do think there's a concern there about how do you get people into the games and also how do you get them to identify with a club when there's this amount of movement going on.
Yeah, and that, I suppose, is the worry when I was drawing up, because I wanted to talk about and perhaps do a 1-2-3, and we still can, you know, the top three Prem signings for next year, the top three URC signings for next year. And when you start to go through the list, you do see a little bit of imbalance. Now, of course, sport changes. It is an evolution. It is a constant process of moving on and moving forward. But when you look at that team that I've just read out, you're like, as you say, it's not the skill or the talent that's leaving. It's the experience, or it's the ticket, it's the draw, it's the name that's potentially looking to bring people in. I mean, that group of people like Sinclair and Creevy and Vunipola and Laws and Ludlam and Vunipola and Farrell and May and Estes and Tuilagi, Liner, Maitland. They're poster boys. They're the guys that were on the front of the posters when Premiership Rugby was, you know, putting itself out there. It was their faces that were being pushed out there. So I think that's the concern. I don't think I'll be alone in my concern as to what the next 2 or 3 years hold for it. The reason it is well documented as to where finances are at the moment and where things are. We have a number of big name players going to France and second division. Because the money is so much better in France. And that's going to be a concern for the next couple of three seasons or so until English rugby sorts itself out, most definitely. Most definitely. But, I mean...
There's one of those on that sum as well, just in terms of the quality that's going out and coming in. If you take a look at the transfers for the Premiership this season, there's not a single club which is bringing in more players than they're letting go.
No. 100%.
I was going to say that as well. Not even close. Yeah.
Not even close. I mean, it's quite painful looking at some of the lists. I think Bristol have come out and said it's the smallest squad that Pat Lam has ever operated with this next season. And yeah. And then when you throw into the thought the idea that obviously we talked on Tuesday, the Premiership Cup fixtures have just been announced. You're going to have to play, you know, second, third, potentially choice players within those sort of environments. But with the squads a lot smaller, you don't tend to have too much choice on second and third tier, you know, players. You're going to have to lean on the same group of players for every single weekend. And these clubs are obviously involved in a number of different competitions to try and be brilliant at week in, week out. So yeah, it's really, really good. Well, let's go there, Sam. I mean, have you had a look at the sort of Premiership signings? Is there a possibility of picking out some people there, or do you want me to go first? Or how do you want to go through a 1-2-3? Yeah, so
I can certainly pick. I think we can do three definitely for the Premiership. I can give you my three, and what I've done here is I've avoided picking inter Premiership signings. Yeah, so, for okay. example, I would say Guy Pepper would be up there,
yeah.
But obviously he's going from Newcastle to Bath. Yeah. So I've avoided that. I'm thinking purely people who are coming into the Prem. Okay. So I think Thomas Williams over to Gloucester. I think that is a great signing. He's still really Wales' number one, number nine, I would say. Mm-hmm. And he's got a huge amount of experience. And I think that Gloucester as well have got enough cover for when he's not available. So I think he's a great signing.
Yeah.
I think potentially Wing Jones from the Scarlets to the Queens has the potential to be an incredibly good signing because he's not been so good the last few years. But I would imagine he's not on a huge amount of money. Mm-hmm. Going there, and it's one of those cases where if he works, amazing, it will be the signing of the season. If he doesn't work, he will at least provide a huge amount of experience to the younger players to you know, he's been there, he's seeing a lot of stuff. So I think he's really up there. And then I would say Wasio Ngaiselebu, who's going to sail.
For you to say.
I actually practiced that one before, but under the spotlight, that went to.
Can you imagine being a commentator? How difficult it is, you know? Come on.
Oh, I mean, I really don't think I could. I could take the Georgian or the Fijian fixtures. I just think I would be a nightmare. And as soon as I went wrong once, I would be wrong for the whole rest of the game. But I mean, he is absolutely box office. So he probably the place is to a large in terms of getting people into the stadium.
Yeah, 100%. And it's funny, I've written down, you've kind of spoken around the ones that I was going to talk about. So it's almost, and I promise you, listeners, we did not confer on this. This has actually worked really, really well. I mean, you mentioned Guy Pepper there. That's really good. Ross Maloney into that Bath squad out of the Leinster. He is a good pickup. And Bath are in such an interesting, I mean, they played so well, really, last year. So well. That this is almost like the really key season for them. They kind of announced themselves. Van Graan has obviously got something. He's got something going. It's pumping again. The wreck is bouncing. This next season is going to be really, really crucial. So I think Bath are definitely one to look forward. Clerter is retired, which does put emphasis on Guy Pepper. I agree, but I agree with your parameters of not picking people who are moving within the Prem. Number three on my list was actually the other half of the Thomas Williams. It was Gareth Anscombe, and to a certain extent, they kind of go as a pair. If those two click, if those two work, and I know we're falling into a trap here of talking Gloucester up, and my God, haven't they been talked up every single season since the world began? But I really do think that potentially. That is the type of halfback partnership that could change things and could motivate and do a lot for a team that has been woefully underachieving for the last however long. So that was my number three. Number two, and again, it links into the small squad. We're going to need players to play very well. And this guy we know can play well. It's Bristol and it's Bill Matter. And I think that is going to be really, really interesting to see because Bristol played exceptionally well at the end of last season. You know, Ben had Renzi van Rensburg. What was his? Ben Hard, Janzi van Rensburg. There you go. They see how difficult his names are. he was playing especially well. They had a few really good games. I was at the Quins game right at the end of last season where they blew them almost off the park. Bristol seemed to be really motoring. They've had to get rid of a lot of players, and it will be interesting to see how they bounce. But someone like Bill Matter could be the difference and could be really, really key to them. The one I've gone for. And again, this links into our conversation. You know, when I was given that team at the start, I was mentioning Waller and Collier and Hepburn and Sinclair and Vunipola. There's a lot of props on the move. There's a lot. Every year, there's a different area that sort of gets up and moves chairs. And it's quite clear it's props. For me, the club who's been busiest or has done, I think, some of the best business in the prop market is Saracens with Rhys Carey, Fraser Balmain, Brocklebank from Newcastle as well. And I think Rhys Carey could be, he's still young. He's coming into Saracens. They lost their little bit of their edge last year and they're losing a lot of good players. Obviously, they have a generation, if you like, moving on from Saracens. It'll be very interesting to see how they do. So that for me was my number one pick, but it was difficult. I did mention Ngaiselebu. I also mentioned Will Addison because he's an absolute favourite of mine. I'm so glad to see him back in the Prem as well. So that'll be really good for Sale. But yeah, that was it. Fascinating, really interesting. But that list there, or who we've spoken about there, compared to that team that we spoke about right at the start, that kind of underlines the situation that we've got at the moment.
It's interesting as well because you mentioned Saracens and actually the players leaving Saracens. I won't do the whole list because that would take up the rest of the episode. But just picking out a couple because this really tells us what's happening in modern rugby and especially the departures from the Premiership. So Owen Farrell off to Racing 92, who are obviously a top 14 team. Christian Judge off to Béziers, who are their Pro D2 side. We've got a bunch of people, namely Tim Sweel, who has just been released. you know, where he's going, particularly at the moment. Ben Harris is going to the championship along with a bunch of other people, including Lugovi Mulipola. Ollie Stoneham and Manu Vimopola both going to Japan, and Alec Davis back to the URC with Cardiff. And that's not exhaustive, as I say, but that's telling you where people are going. You know, we got the top 14. That's probably going to be the really high ranking players who are going to go there and get paid well. You've got the Pro D2, you're going to get paid probably better than the Premiership, but if not, more or less in par. You got Japan, where I don't think you're going to get paid as much, but you're going to get probably a little bit better standard of living and perhaps a slightly easier time of it. And you've got the Championship, where I don't think at the moment many people want to go. So it's telling you a lot, I think, about the market and where things are moving.
So this was a conversation I had with a Championship recruiter who I thought that it was going to be a buyer's market in the Championship, especially there's less clubs in the Prem, there's lots of players available, and I sort of said, oh, you know, you must be busy at the moment, and his response was that actually it's been really tough, and one of the unexpected reasons is that a lot of players have decided to almost, they've looked at the UK market and gone, you know what, I'm not going to stick around. I'm going to take myself almost out of the equation. I'm going to go to Australia. I'm going to go to New Zealand. I'm going to go elsewhere. The Shoot Shield at the moment, by all accounts, has a number of very good English qualified players in it playing the final is this weekend or next weekend. You know, and so they've been there. That's where they've been. They've almost taken themselves out of the reckoning. And maybe they will turn up over the next few weeks and months when they return to the UK. But they kind of made it very difficult for them. They haven't been what I thought would be happening, knocking on doors and saying, pick me, pick me. And from a buyer's market point of view, the clubs would be able to almost drive the price down, and we would have a situation where the players weren't dictating so much about salary and all of that, and the clubs would kind of wrestle it back. But it hasn't really been the case. And again, what's interesting is how does that reflect on English rugby, where players are actually almost upping sticks and packing their bag and disappearing out to other places? It's a really interesting situation, most definitely. What have you? I mean, you've done a huge amount of work on free agent work and the people on the market. Are you hearing something similar? What's happening?
Yeah, so I think there's two types of free agent. You've got the guys who are, they need something because, you know, maybe they were paid well before and things haven't gone, you know, injury or whatever, and now they need something, so they have to stay in the Premiership. They have to look for the higher leagues in France. Then you've got the people, I guess there's a subgroup of those who are people who want to stay in the game, want to stay professional, but maybe haven't got a great offer on the table, and so are willing to go to maybe even the third or even fourth division in France, where you're probably not going to get paid much less than the Championship, and you'll be at least in the pool of talent that which might then go up through the Pro D2. So I think that you've got that group, and then you've got a second group who are a bit more relaxed about it and would love to play professional rugby, but they're not going to chase any paycheck. And if the offer is, you know, 12 grand and somewhere to stay, they would rather get a real world job and play at a much lower level. There's a player I know who was released by a club in the URC and has now joined, I think, the fourth division in England, and is starting a career. He's still young, so he's starting a full-time career outside of that. And speaking to him, it felt like there's no point playing Championship because you have to commit full-time. You can't go off and do something else. National 1 is a little bit too involved. And so something like National 2 is a good mix where you get to play at a high enough level, but also you get to start that full-time career. And so I do think it's not very romantic, but I do think that's what you have to do at the moment, really.
Yeah, I think it's something that is probably a symptom of the situation, financial situation that rugby finds itself in the moment. I did one for the URC, which was quite interesting as well. And listen to the names on this. I mean, there's Josh Ione, who's going to Connacht. Rory Sutherland and Adam Hastings are going back to Glasgow, I thought were great pickups. Lewis Liner and Matt Gallagher are going to Benetton, which I thought was great. The third on my list for the URC Esterhazen, who we've kind of mentioned, going back to the Sharks, and Kitsoff going back to the Stormers, both two South African giants going back to South African teams. Number two was Callum Sheedy, because I love Callum Sheedy, so Callum Sheedy has to be involved in things. He's going to Cardiff, and Cardiff need something at the moment. They just were so close on so many different occasions last year. They need something, and I think Callum Sheedy could be a catalyst for something there. But the number one signing, and this is disgusting at the moment, you look at Leinster, there are three Leinster signings. Have you heard the Leinster signings? Snyman, RG Snyman, Slimani, and Jordy Barrett. I mean, you're like, oh, right. It's like you read those, you go, oh, well played, everyone else. But they need something. They need something. They are obviously feeling massively like they're underperforming, even if they are doing very well. They feel as though they're not quite there. Extraordinary stuff. Those sort of names for the URC probably show that the URC might be a slightly better, certainly a bigger draw at the moment than the Prem.
I think you're right. I think that there's some. I think Leinster get a lot of stick. And I think when you spend that much money, you put yourself in the firing line. Mm-hmm. But I think being in their orbit does help those clubs. You know, you end up in the situation where people want to watch URC. People want to watch one of the best teams in Europe. Just as when every other bit of rugby stopped and we watched Toulouse in the top 14 final, it felt like everyone's eyes were on that game, partly because everything else stopped, but also because Toulouse are a team that everyone wants to watch. And so I do think that it has that draw where there's, you look at the Prem, and I would say Northampton are probably providing some of that draw because they're such an exciting side. But you know, the European performances are being underwhelming across the league. And so I do think that maybe the URC is a place to go and where there is more opportunity.
Yeah, as I say, it will be interesting to see how it goes and whether or not it, you know, whilst the season gets up and going, mid-September is when it formally starts going, whether or not there still be a little bit of unwrapping and there's still a little bit of settling down as that season progresses, most definitely. However, let's talk about something a little bit different. And over to you, Sam Lana, as you try and explain in 50 words or less exactly what on earth is going to go on at the next Rugby World Cup. Go.
Okay, so I quite like what they're trying to do. Okay. In the World Cup, but let me be very kind of, let me try and lay it out very simply.
So I've got a pen and paper. I'm going to write the stuff down. Carry on. Yeah, come on.
There will be a quiz at the end of this, Sam. So, so let's go back to 2023 first of all.
Right. Okay.
So, 12 automatic qualifiers, and they were the people who finished in the top three of their pool.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much Six Nations and Rugby Championship.
Yeah.
Plus we had Japan in there and Fiji in there as well, 2023. Then there's a bunch of continental qualifiers, similar to kind of the Football World Cup, where, you know, Europe will get, say, 10 and Africa will get 4 or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. So last time, the continental qualifiers came from Africa with Namibia, the Americas with Uruguay and Chile, Europe with Georgia and Romania, and Oceania with Samoa. And there was no one from Asia because Japan had already qualified and no one else got through.
Okay.
Then there was a playoff final and final qualification tournament. So the two.
And this
winners...
this is where we use the word repêchage, which is a wonderful word and rarely gets used in any other area of anything, really, doesn't it? And this is just great. So repêchage, are they keeping the repêchage? Just so I can just say
they're
the word?
Keeping the repêchage. We will get to use it because it's the Rugby World Cup. It's cycling,
yeah.
It's the cycling at the Olympics. I think maybe like the 800 meters has a repêchage round.
Yeah, I think so.
I think that's the only time we get to use it.
If you know, by the way, if you're listening in and you know if there's another sport that uses that word, please add it to a list. We'd love to get a repêchage top 10. I like it. Keep going, Sam. Keep going.
So the repêchage was, there was two repêchage.
Steady on.
And one was Tonga, who failed to escape the kind of the Pacific Nations, but then they beat Hong Kong in the playoff, and so they qualified. And then the last four was the US, Hong Kong, Portugal, and Kenya, who went into the big final round lobbing repêchage, and as we know, Portugal escaped that to go through
in dramatic style. Fantastic,
exactly, with a dramatic draw, which was quite something.
Indeed.
So move forward to 2027. We're keeping some elements of what we had before. So 12 automatic qualifiers, and they're the same 12. So it's Japan and Fiji joining the Six Nations in the Rugby Championship.
Yeah.
Then there's now, because we're going up to 24, there's now 10 continental qualifiers. So those 10 continental qualifiers are going to come from one from Africa, one from Asia, four from Europe, three from the Pacific, and the Pacific has now combined North America with the Pacific nations, Tonga, Samoa, etc.
Right. So what about South America?
South America has got their own group, and they're going to qualify one.
Oh, nice. Okay. So how many teams in total then? That's more teams in total. That's
20. Yes. So 12 automatic, 10 continental, so 22. And then we're adding two from playoffs and from repêchage wingers.
Right. Okay.
Have you kept up so far?
Not really, to be fair. I got pretty excited in the middle there and I've lost all thread. But that's so 24 divisible by 4 is 6. Hold on, this doesn't Correct. Seem to make work. So how is it going to work in the... See, I'm already thinking about how it's going to go wrong. You see, I've been in this rugby game too long. Carry on. Keep going.
So six pools of four.
Yeah.
So we're dropping a match in the group stages, and we're adding a kind of a pre-quarterfinal, a round of 16.
Right. And you're going to qualify, I'm guessing, because it'll be six groups and then... hang on. So two from 12, and then the four best qualifiers. Is that what work?
I think
the top two.
Yes.
And the four
I believe men. I believe that's what we're doing.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my understanding. I will say I haven't gone much beyond the qualifying. Part of this, but yes, so that's my understanding. Is that
would make sense? That would make sense. But we know that sometimes things that make sense and Rugby World Cups don't necessarily go together.
Doesn't necessarily go like that. Exactly. Okay. The good news, so the big headline I will say on this, Asia will definitely get one more representative. Brilliant. So we're not going to get, we're always going to get Japan, but we are also now going to get at least one other. So if that goes to form like it has done so far, or in previous tournaments, that will be Hong Kong.
Okay.
So we will get Hong Kong in a World Cup.
Wow,
which would be quite exciting.
Fantastic. That will be absolutely brilliant. One of the questions, probably a hangover from the last World Cup, is about seedings. When will seedings happen, and will Ireland have a group with New Zealand, South Africa and England in it? I mean, this is what we all want to know, really.
Well, I mean, we hope so, don't we? Because it creates such interesting discourse on Twitter during that.
Very interesting. They were and it seemed to go on for a long time. They seemed to remember that, didn't they? For a long time that they were in this group, Scotland especially. But there we go. Then we carry on.
They did, yeah. So my understanding is that this is going to happen actually a bit closer, but not hugely closer to what it was.
Okay.
What will change is that we won't have we won't have the teams drawn as Europe 4, because we will already know who is going to get qualified. So it will happen after the 2025 qualification period, but it will happen kind of not massively before the tournament itself.
Okay.
But I believe closer than it was before.
Okay.
So it still leaves open the possibility of a super group with, England, New Zealand, South Africa, all in one group together. And the joy that would bring us all.
We look forward to it. We very much look forward to it. Now, our guest coming this in our next Blindside episode is Tom Tainton. I've spoken to him before, COO, chief man in charge of operations over at Bristol. But we talked to him about the digital age of rugby. I know him very well. What were your takes on it? Why should people listen to that episode, Sam Lana?
I mean, he's someone I've crossed paths with before. He is very astute, I would say. It's easy to think that rugby is run by a lot of people who don't have a huge amount of idea how to do it. Sometimes Tom will completely set you right, I think, on that. I think it's fairly easy to look at that and think, oh, we're in good hands. I thought very smart. I thought he had some great ideas about what goes on. And Bristol, if you're not aware of them on Twitter, have a little look before you listen to this episode, because you will see some of the stuff they're doing that's a little bit different to perhaps you might expect from clubs. And you can't length about that.
You can't be on social media and not know about Bristol Bears. They do some absolutely brilliant stuff, very eye-catching. It was great to have Tom Tainton. It was for half an hour, and my goodness, we could have so much more out of him. I'm sure we're going to have him back on the show. So listen to that. That's the Blindside episode coming out very, very soon indeed. But for now, thank you so much. We seem to have crammed a huge amount into 35 minutes there. Another jam-packed session full of all sorts of different things. And thank you for trying to, you know, allow me to understand what might be happening in the next Rugby World Cup.
Fill you in, Sam, as we go. I'll let you know how Asia qualifying is going, how South Korea versus Hong Kong are matching up. And what's going on in Europe as well?
We need a Hong Kong klaxon. That's what we need. Every time it's mentioned, we need a Hong Kong klaxon. For now, thank you to Sam Lana. And thank you from me, Sam Roberts. And until next time, goodbye from the Whiteboard Rugby Podcast.